The following program, the Acunet Mortgage and Realty Show, is paid for in full by Acunet Mortgage, LLC, an equal housing lender, consumeraccess.org, number 255368. The advice and opinions expressed during the Acunet Mortgage and Realty Show are solely that of the hosts and guests of Acunet Mortgage, LLC, and not WTMJ or Good Karma Brands.
Welcome to the Acunet Mortgage and Realty Show, getting you inside information on buying, selling, and financing your home with expert advice from Acunet Mortgage and Realty. And now, here's Brian and David Wickert.
Welcome to the Acunet Mortgage and Realty Show. I'm Brian Wickert, the licensed real estate broker with Acunet Realty Advisors, and also the majority owner of Acunet Mortgage, along with my son, David Wickert, who is one of our top senior loan consultants and also our chief client experience officer. By the way, my NMLS ID number is 259610. David, what's yours?
328847.
There you go. We are now regulatorily compliant. If you've got a question or a comment, you can call or text us on the WTMJ Talk and Text line, which is 855-616-1620. And you can get a podcast of today's show or any of our past shows wherever you normally get your podcast. So, David, big week in big news item, big Friday. One of the biggest numbers of every month is the monthly, what do they call it? Job situation? What's the official title of it?
Non-farm payroll. NFP.
Well, non-farm payroll, but it's the employment situation report. That's what they call it. The employment situation report. And it comes out from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the BLS. And David, why do we care in the mortgage industry about this once a month report?
It all ties back to 70% of the American economy is built on people spending money. People need to have jobs in order to spend money. When people spend money, and if there's too much money chasing too few goods, that can drive up inflation. And inflation is the enemy of interest rates, which has been the case for two some years now.
Right. Or since the beginning of time. But most recently in the past 2 years. So so we got the report, and how many, so there's two surveys, just by the way, folks. There's a survey that the Bureau of Labor Statistics gets from payroll companies and large employers. And that's where we find out how many new jobs were created. And what was the theoretical number there or estimate, David?
For February, that the American economy created 275,000 new jobs. Forecasts were about, 200,000. The bigger, there's a mixed bag. So that was, 275,000 jobs. January, in case everyone didn't remember, was a gangbusters number that when it was reported in the first week of February, we added 353,000 jobs in January. Oh, but then the Bureau of Labor Statistics this past Friday was like, did we say 353? What we meant was, let's revise it. In January, we created 229,000 jobs. Still strong.
But still, that's off by over 100,000. And the mortgage rate markets did not like that last report. So rates kind of went
up. That's a ton of jobs. That's a ton of jobs, ton of money, ton of spending. Yeah.
Inflationary. So then, like you said, this was a mixed bag. So we got some kind of mortgage-friendly news on that last revision. The other thing that was in there was average hourly earnings was only up 0.1% from the previous month. So that was half of the expected amount. And that goes to wage inflation, right? So, okay, people aren't making a lot more. And then the other number that was in there was the 3.9% unemployment rate. Do you want to explain that, David, a little bit?
The unemployment rate is those seeking work but have not found any. Is it, once you stop looking for work after, is it 4 weeks?
8 weeks, I think.
Eight weeks? I don't remember. You are no longer part of the unemployment rate. There's plenty. If you would like to find flaw in the unemployment rate, you will find it. But it is, because it is reported consistently, we can at least hang our hat that over time, at least its inconsistency is consistent.
Consistent, yep. So that was a little higher than what was expected. The market was expecting it to hang in there at 3.7.
Yeah.
And so it was up a little bit. The number of unemployed people, according to the phone survey, this is where the Bureau of Labor Statistics hires a company to call a bunch of people and say, are you working? Do you wish you were working? Are you working part-time because you'd rather work full-time, but you can only find part-time work? All those kinds of great questions. And so long story short, there are 334,000 more people unemployed, bringing the total to 6.4 million in all of America. That's really not that many. Because, you know, I always like to think of, hey, you know what? That means that 96.1% of people who want a job have them.
Have one.
Just by the way. And the other important thing is that 62.5% of working age Americans are working. If you're ever wondering how many people are holding down a job in America, and these are, I think these are still non-farm jobs, 167,426,000. Boom. Okay. That's how many people are making this economy go. Kind of doesn't seem that many, does it, to you, David?
That's a lot of people. By the way, just for reference, unemployment rate 3.9. A traditional economist would tell you that full employment, air quotes, is at 5%. So some of what the Federal Reserve is trying to do is, are we overemployed? Meaning there's lots of jobs and lots of spending and pushing on inflation.
Yeah. Yep. So, all right. So the bottom line is rates didn't change much. They got a touch better. We kind of mainly dodged a bullet because, if you know, it could have been worse. So,
well, and saddle up, because on Tuesday is the CPI report, the other of the two biggest numbers in a month, the jobs report first Friday or first-ish Friday, and then the consumer price index, CPI, which is the inflation reading, that's on Tuesday coming up here on the 12th.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk about how rates really don't matter to people who are passionate about buying a home. We've got a couple stories to share with you, and we will tell you where rates end of the week. You're listening to the Accudent Mortgage and Realty Show on AM 620 WTMJ.
Home buying advice from the guys who know it best. This is the Accunet Mortgage and Realty Show with Brian Wickert on WTMJ.
Welcome back, and thanks again for tuning in to this week's show. I'm Brian the Elder. That's David the Younger over there. Last name Wickert. And David, last week you were telling us about a couple that you did a pretty nice job of setting them up for success, writing an offer. I believe it was in Waukesha County, like around 600,000. Was that the price range?
Yeah.
And they were up against at least 11 other offers, and they came in second, or who knows, but they didn't come in first, despite, you know, our best efforts. So you got an update for us on that.
These buyers, to their credit, dusted themselves off and got back to it, found another house that they were interested in. And over the weekend, as they, you know, went to see the home, as any Accunet loan consultant can and does offer, these folks were committed to making a 20% down payment. And so when they updated me again, hey, David, I know, you know, this other house we lost, but man, we're back at it at 123 Main Street. What I pulled up, because it, you know, this is, it's competitive out there, and you need every advantage that you can share to make a seller feel safe by choosing you. Yeah. The one that we reached for was, I plugged in 123 Main Street into the, you know, their setup in our software. Because what I ran is, I said, oh, you're thinking of writing your contract price at X dollars? Well, I'm going to plug that into the computer system, put it at 20% down, and we're going to run this house through the computer mortgage software to be like, are we going to need an appraisal or not? And when I ran it through, the skies opened up and sunshine splashed upon my face. The computer system said, we do not need an appraisal on this house at this price with these buyers. And don't you know it? Bam. I put that on the pre-approval letter. The buyer's agent sent it to the listing agent. I called and texted the listing agent, and huzzah, come Monday morning, they had an accepted offer.
Yeah, because they didn't have to worry about the appraisal. What did they end up doing on that one, on the inspection contingency, Devin?
They still included, I'm going from memory, I think they included a large exception, or large, like, hey, $10,000, don't worry about it. Yeah, not unlimited.
Okay. All right. That's better than going naked, as we say, but good for you, and good for them for getting right back on the horse and writing another offer. go ahead. You got something else to add to that?
Well, so there's two more little nuggets to this. You know, the other true thing, a lot of times, Dad, I sometimes describe, we do public pre-approvals and private pre-approvals that you might want to show a seller, hey, look, I am able to do 20% down. But then privately, if you're considering less, you know, down payment because you want to keep some of your cash, we'll also generate and, you know, show our clients, like, you would also be approved privately if you only want to do 10% down payment.
Yeah. You just can't get but, that super special appraisal, no appraisal required.
Well, and
if
so
you
this
put
is
less
what
than 20%
I,
down. Yeah.
This on Monday morning when we connected, I said, you know, I just need to triple confirm, or I'm basically telling you, if you wrote your contract with no appraisal needed, nobody's walking through the house, you don't get to change your mind now about the down payment. You yeah. are strapped
You're
in
committed.
To 20% down. Yes. And
yeah.
they
and they're okay with that, right?
Absolutely. But I just didn't want to ignore, you know, that even if they wanted to consider putting less than 20% down,
that would
the more
cause
they couldn't yeah. do it, because the more important thing was, if you put 15% down, the computer system is highly unlikely.
No, it just
say,
won't. It's hard coded, buddy.
It
can't.
No,
you've had one at 15%.
Absolutely, right,
well,
yes.
Well, arm wrestle on that at another time. But I thought that you had to have 20% down. All right. Anything else on this particular transaction?
Present,
how are you doing on the approval? How are you doing on the approval, David?
We had the accepted offer on Monday, and come Friday morning, we had approval from underwriting. I would say we are functionally clear to close. There's some clerical stuff like title, got to get the homeowner's insurance wrapped up, but that was basically the only two things. So when you don't need an appraisal and you get me your pay stubs and your W-2s and your down payment, you know, lickety
money,
split,
yeah.
you can have the accepted offer on Monday. And by that Friday, as I sometimes like to say, we're just counting down the days till closing now.
Yeah.
I'm only going to have boring updates like, yep, still waiting.
Still
between
waiting.
Now
what did
and
they
closing.
Decide to do on their rate and closing cost combination? Did they decide to pay up some money to get a lower rate, or which way do they go?
Well, so let me tee this up, because this is worth examining. As we always do, we offer choice. And in column one, I was like, here's that trophy rate. You want that low rate? Man, we
what
can
is
give
it?
It to you.
What was it,
for them, it was 6375.
Ooh, baby.
Paying points to get there, too. But then the opposite end of the spectrum, ugly looking 7375, but
Ooh.
Ugly for a reason, because you had no closing costs. Let me talk you through how they went about analyzing that after this break. You're listening to the AccuNet Mortgage and Realty Show on AM 620 WTMJ.
Getting you into the home of your dreams. Here's more of the AccuNet Mortgage and Realty Show with Brian Weckert on WTMJ.
Welcome back to the AccuNet Mortgage and Realty Show. I'm David. That's Brian over there. Dad, I was telling you about some buyer clients of mine who, you know, were defeated the week prior, having lost out to 11 other offers on a home that they were interested in, dusted themselves back off, and huzzah, found a house. Didn't need an appraisal on the contract, and by Monday when we had the accepted offer, all their documentation, come Friday, we were basically clear to close. And what I wanted to detail was your question on how did my clients go about picking their interest rate and closing cost combination. Do you want to take a guess maybe how the conversation
went? I think they went in the middle, because you said you offered them 6.375 with a lot of points,
mm-hmm.
which would still have the lowest annual percentage rate, because those points get slathered out over all 30 years. Points are just interest paid in advance in order to obtain a lower rate. Then you said you offered them a 7.3, a full 1% higher at 7.375, but that was with no loan cost. And then you'd give them something in the middle, like 6.99.
I did give a 6.99, you know, something in the middle, not too hot, not too cold.
Yeah, I bet they picked the 6.99.
Well, it was what. So here's how the story actually went. We began with proposal three at the no cost option, because what they, you know, as I reviewed with them, I was like, when you do proposal three, you have no sunk cost in a no cost loan option. That at any time, when rates come down, you're not waiting to break even on an investment in to points to get the lower rate, to get the, you know, as I like to say, when you pay points, you're digging a hole, a one-time hole, and then you're filling that hole 1 month at a time with your monthly payment savings.
That's right.
And so they began with proposal three, and then come Wednesday, upon further analysis and discussion, and here I'm going to hit you with this reason, they pivoted all the way to proposal one. Ooh. With the maximum points and the lowest rate.
Because?
And because, so these folks do have a portfolio that they're, you know, has done well for them with their investment advisor. And at least the initial, and I didn't push back on this necessarily, was because should rates come down, their expectation as a family is that their portfolio might rise in value, offsetting the cost today to acquire the lower rate because their portfolio goes up in value.
I don't track that, but okay. Hey, you know what? Whatever you want.
Well, it's exactly.
Just that you're never going to get that, you know, we're hoping here in the mortgage industry in general and Accudent in particular, that maybe by the end of this year or the beginning of 2025, you know, maybe we're going to be able to give people the 6.375 rate with no points. They are never going to get their points back. I would point out.
Not directly, or at least as I think about that, they're comfortable not getting it back directly. And in their minds, right or wrong, if their portfolio goes up, that will offset what they might not recoup. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting logic.
But this is why we offer choice. It's because it's their life. They need to be comfortable, and they're deciding for themselves. And I was like,
is this a primary residence?
This is a primary.
And if they do itemize their deductions on their federal tax return and state tax return, points paid on a primary residence are tax deductible. I just re-verified that last week on the IRS website. Yeah. And meaning that, you know, you can say, hey, I'm going to reduce my income by the amount of points I paid on the purchase of my primary residence in the year that I paid them. So that kind of puts them on sale, if you will, at whatever your marginal income tax rate is. So that's not nothing. All right. I've got a similar story that we talked about last week relative to that big loan that we're doing in Florida to help these people buy the beautiful home on one of the keys in Florida. And, you know, that's a situation where I actually recommended the paying of points because the cost to refinance in Florida is so high. Florida has a county and a state tax on mortgages. Why? Don't have an income tax. So you got to get your tax money somewhere. Exactly. And then the title insurance costs are really high in Florida compared to Wisconsin and even Illinois. And so that's one where I had recommended 6.375, paying, I think, 1.5 points or so to get that rate on a jumbo mortgage.
Yeah.
Because it's over the conforming limit. So I got a couple of rest of the stories on that. You might remember from last week, I said I was going to suggest that they borrow more money.
Oh, yeah.
So they have more money left over after they buy this beautiful home to, you know, just have. And they took me up on that. So we increased the loan amount by a couple $100,000. But then there's a couple of other nuggets on that story that I want to go over. But we're going to do that after we hand it over to the Breaking News Center.
Don't break the bank to get into a house. Back to the Acunet Mortgage and Realty Show with Brian Wickert on WTMJ.
Welcome back, and thanks again for spending some of your Sunday with us. I'm Brian Wickert, the elder. That's David Wickert, the younger, taller, more handsome of the Wickerts. And we love what we do. In fact, David, you were telling me off the air that you had a real estate agent recently after a transaction say, I am sending all my buyers to you. Why did they say that?
Well, I mean, proof is in the pudding that they enjoyed the experience. As much as you can tell someone that we're really good at what we do, there's nothing quite like, you know, showing them and proving it that we're really good at what we do. And having done that, they were like, we should do more transactions together.
More things,
and so we will.
Yeah, when you're good at your craft and you're passionate about it, it comes through. And I don't do many loans anymore because I'm like to have you younger folks take over that responsibility. But I had a nice compliment similar to that on this Florida transaction that we're doing, because I think we all are trained to go that extra mile and think of things like I was mentioning. You know, we started out with a $1.3 million loan amount, and I said, you know, maybe you want to have a little money, more money left over. You really can afford it.
And, did you take the incrementalism approach? Like, hey, you're starting at 1.3. How's about 1.301?
I just went right to, they had shared with me in a conversation, hey, you know what? We think we'd like to have like 2 years worth of living expenses left over. And so I took that and I did the math. And I said, if you put this amount of money down, you're not going to have that. But if you borrow another couple hundred thousand, you know, move that loan amount up, you will have that 2 years worth of living expense reserve that you kind of said was, gives you comfort. And, you know, so that was cool. And they were like really happy with that advice. We also kind of talked through, because did I mention that Florida title insurance is really expensive? And on a big purchase price, you know, it was like almost $10,000 for the owner's policy. And what's weird about Florida, depending on what county you're doing business in Florida, sometimes the buyer is made to pay for all the title insurance costs. And that's the case up there in, I think we're in Sarasota County. And so then I looked at that and said, do we need that? And so we had the conversation of, well, I have to have a lender's policy for my loan amount. And, you know, that alone, which they also have to pay for, that's going to be like $6,000. And, you know, that just protects me. If there's a problem with the title company that wrote the policy is going to have to fix the problem.
Can I clarify? So the lender's policy protects the loan amount.
And the loan amount and the lender. The beneficiary of the policy is, so let's just say it's $1.5 million and the beneficiary is Acunet, its successors, and or assigns.
So you just that doesn't protect against. So that's only 1.5. If the house is worth 2.5.
Well, in this case, almost 3.
Okay, the lender's policy does not cover all of that other equity that you might have in your house.
That's right. And so we talked about that. You know, if there's a $2 million problem, you're not going to get, or a $2.5 million problem, hey, Acunet's going to be made whole, or whoever we sell the loan to, but you are not. And they just went, we don't think there's going to be such a problem. And frankly, neither I nor the title company could come up with a plausible example.
Risk is what you don't see.
Yeah. Well, so that was another interesting, you know, value added conversation. They made their decision. But then what I wanted to share is that, you know, real estate transactions go through some emotional turmoil sometimes. And so you might recall from this story last week, the first thing I did was I looked up on the county website and saw that, oh, the old property taxes were $8,000. What are they going to be after this place changes hands? And I came up with a number using the county's website of just $33,900.
Yeah.
That didn't faze them. Okay. So then the next thing, because they thought they were going to be maybe a little lower. Geez, I hope they are. But we qualified them at that
31.
Bigger number.
Yeah.
Then this property is in a floodplain. And, you know, because it's right on a key, you know, one of those little skinny island or isthmuses. Now, luckily, it's on the inland side. So the flood insurance, they're able to get it transferred from the old owner. Okay, now we're over to the homeowner's insurance, which is what covers hurricanes and wind. And you want to guess what their first quote? They got 3 quotes initially. And you just want to take a wild guess?
This is basically hurricane coverage is what they're getting quoted?
And it's a $3 million house, but the cost to replace the house is only $1.2
million. $10,000.
$40,000.
$40,000?
And then the cheapest one, if they went with some combination of like Lloyd's of London and somebody else, was all the way down to $32,000. So they're like, now this is starting to give them pause. Right,
like, not the property taxes, not the flood, but like, oh, you want the house rebuilt? Isn't that a little backwards almost? But
the flood insurance, remember, only covers you up to 250, just by the way, because it's FEMA. And so luckily they were able to find a policy that only cost $12,900. And that kind of made everything okay. But there was this moment of doubt. We're like, maybe we don't want to own this house. And so luckily they came out of that, and it's all going to work out. All right. When we come back, I got a great email from a buyer looking to buy a duplex. Let's talk about that when we come back, David. You're listening to the Acunet Mortgage and Realty Show on Wisconsin's radio station, AM 620 WTMJ.
Important home buying questions and answers you can count on. This is the Acunet Mortgage and Realty Show with Brian Wickert on WTMJ.
Welcome back, and thanks again for tuning in to today's show. So, David, many people I know, including our Acunet's own Jerry Sirkatich, and I remember our first neighbors when we bought in the St. Joe's area did the same thing. Many, many, many Milwaukeeans have started out owning homes and buying a duplex as their first home.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, hey, let's have somebody else make the rental payment and we'll live in that other unit and they'll help us make the mortgage payment is what I meant to say. And, you know, then you have to live there for a year in order for it to be considered owner occupied. And then, you know, maybe you move out and you keep that rental property and enjoy the rental income and go buy your single family house if you want that. So I got a email on Friday from a client that we had worked on to do a pre-approval in 22, but didn't go anywhere. And so she writes that she's 37 and her boyfriend is 35. They're planning to get married and they see joint homeownership as a serious financial commitment. I agree. They're not certain if it's best to get married before or after a purchase. And they're kind of asking me to comment on each of these things. You go. Better to buy before or after you get married?
I mean, how certain are you that you're actually going to get married?
Well,
no,
right.
It's just...
And stay married.
And remain married. Well, but that's exactly it. What they're actually asking is, hey, Brian, if it doesn't work out, you know, how does the real estate get handled in our not married or married status?
I don't even think they were thinking that way. I think they were thinking, is there some advantage in the mortgage world of being married? And the answer is no.
No.
There's not. But what I wrote back to them is, you know, nobody ever goes to the altar thinking that they're not going to stay married for...
Not nobody, but go on.
Okay, most people. And so I said, you know, the nice thing about being married and owning real estate is if you then dissolve the relationship, the courts take care of the
They compel you to figure it out.
Here's what's going to happen. All your marital assets, you know, and there's a referee. If you're not married, you don't have that. And
well,
so
there's
said,
no boyfriend court is what you're saying.
That's right. And I said, but, you know, you could have this very unromantic thing called a prenup that says, you know, this is what's going to happen if we break up and we own this property together. Here's how we're going to handle it. I would say that 2% of people do that. And these people are young. They don't have a lot of assets. She does own a condo, by the way. So she is a condo owner. And, you know, and it may turn out that, hey, maybe they already have their wedding plan. I haven't talked to her live. Maybe they already have their wedding plan for, you know, September. Mm-hmm. And so the only risk is that they would break up between the time they buy a home in May and our duplex.
Which is okay, because, like, you can buy a house unmarried, and then if you break up, then you could just, you know, sell the house. Just like you can do in a divorce, by the way. You don't have to retain the real estate. You can just sell it.
That's true. So that was question, you know, number one. And we've talked about that before on the show. Then she talks about, okay, she owns this condo that might be worth $70,000 or $80,000. She's not certain if she should keep it or sell it. And later on, she says they have about $10,000 saved up for down payment. So those two things go together. What is the minimum down payment you can make if you're buying a duplex, David?
If you're a military veteran, the answer to that question is 0%.
Okay, they're not. What if you're not?
Otherwise, FHA, 3.5%, which is true. Right. FHA, one unit, two, three, four units, you can do 3.5% down.
3.5%. But I pointed that out, and I said, but listing agents and sellers really don't like FHA because there can be no peeling or chipping paint anywhere. That's out of concern of lead poisoning. There can be no broken glass on any of the windows or doors. You have to have handrails on all the steps inside and out, and there can be no trip hazards, like, you know, uneven sidewalk slabs or cracks that you could trip over. Did I miss anything?
No, but I've taken that
fear,
the stink eye sometimes that sellers, you know, cast toward an FHA pre-approval.
Yeah.
And I've told buyers, turn it around on the sellers and be like, wait, you're telling me your house is in such disrepair that this short list of safety stuff is really something that's going to bother you?
That's a really good strategy, David.
I mean, to turn it around, it's like, your house is so crummy right now, really you're going to beat me up that you've got chipping paint? Yeah. I mean, in a competitive situation, you really don't have that juice as a buyer.
Well, but yeah, and it's minimal down payment. But now we just had a nice, so FHA does have a stigma, let's say, when it comes to
sure.
listing agents in particular, but maybe it can be overcome. We should put up together a marketing piece on that, by the way. But now what just happened in conventional, regular Fannie Freddie land? Not too long ago.
So it used to be that for a conventional loan on a two-unit property, you would have to do 15% down. That has been relaxed now, where if you fit in the income box, now more than ever, you could do as little as 5% down on a two-unit property. Let's get into some of those gritty details. As always in mortgage lending, the devil is in the details. True and duplex as anything else. You're listening to the AccuNet Mortgage and Realty Show on the biggest stick in the state, AM 620 WTMJ.
Find a place to call home without the headache. This is the AccuNet Mortgage and Realty Show with Brian Wickard on WTMJ.
Welcome back, and we're talking about a very common, at least Milwaukee, and maybe this is true in other places, buying a duplex as a way to buy your first primary residence together. And we're talking about a young couple, and what are their options? Well, we've covered you could do 3.5% down on a FHA loan, but that doesn't get looked on upon as favorably by listing agents because of FHA appraisal requirements and property condition requirements. So the good news is that now, very recently, Fannie Mae came out and said, you know, you can put as little as 5% down on a duplex, because they're trying to make homes more accessible to more people. And the interesting thing is there's no income limit now with Fannie Mae. If your qualifying income is at 100% or less of the county's area median income, which for Milwaukee County is $100,000 or right around there, maybe $100,200 or something like that, then Fannie Mae will waive its loan level price adjustments, think of this as risk penalties, which on a duplex are now 1.25% of the loan amount. So that's not too bad, even if you're above. And if with their combined income, she writes in her email, she makes $70,000 and he makes $55,000. So together, they're over that 100% area median income limit. They're also over the limit for our special Wisconsin first-time homebuyers program. But we've got a shot at 5% down. So then, you know, her other question had to do whether she should sell her condo because they only have $10,000 for a down payment. And I started doing some math. I said, well, if you want to buy a $250,000 duplex, you know, 5% down is $12,500. Mm-hmm. And then plus, don't forget, you got your first year of homeowners insurance. You got to put away 2 or 3 months into the escrow account. Loan costs on a duplex are about $1,700 because the appraisals are more expensive. Mm-hmm. And and you got the home inspection, which is also going to be more costly because it's a bigger property. You're looking at like $4,000 of other things in addition to the down payment. So I said, I think you got to sell your condo so that you have extra money and you can buy a nicer duplex. So we're basically, you know, kind of answering all of her questions as to, you know, how should we navigate through this? So we'll see. She's got a lot to digest. Over to you, Dave.
You've got the analysis part spot on, but there's a competitive part to this too that I'm sure was in the back of your mind, that there are not just home buyers interested in snapping up $250,000 duplexes. You're competing against investors and cash offers as well. And so that's the other part of this coin is, yeah, we can get you set up and we can hand you the pre-approval letter that details, yep, we can get you the mortgage, but then you must go forth into the marketplace and convince a seller to pick yours over somebody else's. If she sells that condo, they are likely to be able to say, hey, we can do 20% down, the magical down, 20% maybe. Down or more. On this duplex. And then if privately they're like, you know what, shoot, we'd like to keep our cash
just
and
put the 5%
and we utilize, Yeah, as little as 5% down. That's the other part of this analysis as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The other thing is, guess what? How we got in contact with this 30-something person? Her mother, okay. Who we helped, and her husband buy a really nice place way up north in the northernmost regions of Minnesota. And so maybe we'll say, hey, what about a gift for mom and dad? If not in reality.
But yeah.
Well, you know, maybe that backup gift that we talked about.
Can I also just say, like, and this is my personal bias, that, you know, don't keep the condo as a rental property. The cash proceeds has so much more value to you and your life than the couple hundred bucks you might be getting, you know, net rental income above the cost.
You know what? There's a family thing. Her mother and mother's husband own some rental properties. So there's just kind of this family tradition of rental properties are good, right? And a good investment. So, but they're short on down payment. I mean, with just $10,000 for down payment and closing costs, that is not going to get you very far in today's market. So that's a recap. Love to help young people figure out their path towards their next house in this case, or first house in the case of the fiance, because he's not been a home buyer before. David, that's gone by fast today's show. Thanks for your help and talking through all these fun issues. We'll be here at the same time next week. You've been listening to the Acunet Mortgage and Realty Show on AM 620 WTMJ.
The preceding was a paid program. Advice and opinions expressed during the Acunet Mortgage and Realty Show are solely that of the hosts or guests of Acunet Mortgage and Acunet Realty Advisors, and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.